Zone d'opacité offensive by Dornish Viper, a Disco Elysium and Sacred and Terrible Air fanfic. Read by
Daisy Diversions.
15.
Jack's Long Coat.
Shitposting.
Sun Kitten Shash.
And Tipsy Kitty.
Tags include Harry Dubois / Kim Kitsuragi. Implied Krasmazov / Ignis Nilsson. Non-chronological. Experimental style. Louverture. Gun violence. Nuclear weapons. ACAB includes Kim Kitsuragi. Summary. History echoes across Elysium, through Revachol, and inside Kim Kitsuragi's trigger finger.
There is no silence before it drops. No contemplative last few moments before the countdown to the end hits zero. No, as the aircraft hovers above Revachol, and innocent Saint Miro's fingers curl with dreadful anticipation for an inevitable climax. Everything in the city below buzzes the way it usually does. A woman, carrying empty cloth bags, makes her way down her apartment building's winding staircase. She sighs a sound filled to the brim with ennui, just as, in the park across the street, a child scrapes his knee and calls desperately for his older sister. And as his sister turns to him, the bomb begins to drop.
It starts simple, small. A cup of coffee on his desk, steaming hot and dark and perfect. A squeeze on the shoulder. A smile he can see behind his eyelids when they close. Looks that last just a moment too long. All of it is something warm bursting in his chest. It's under his rib cage and he can feel it pulsing. It spreads inside him and blooms desperately. It scares him. But despite himself, Kim still likes it. He likes the dull green of Harry's eyes. Dull green like moss, like the forest, like algae, like paint chipping off the wall, like oxidized copper. He likes the wrinkles around his eyes when he laughs. Grooves on the complex geography of his skin. Fault lines, mountains, caverns. The worn muscle on his arms, his hands. The strength, the grit, the perseverance. The long and complicated life. There's a renewed spark in him ever since Martinez, or so everyone says. Kim cannot stop liking it, and it is so, so easy for him to slip.
Hey, what's going on?
The woman shouts, her daughter clinging to her hand. She pushes her way to the front of the crowd. She's just gotten off work and needs to bring her daughter home. There's no time to waste.
Ma'am,
says a sour-looking officer of the RCM stationed by the train gates.
You may board, but the train prices went up this morning. Boarding now costs 3 real.
She scoffs, hand tightening around her daughter's.
3 real? Are you insane? Do you think we shit gold? This is the third increase in train fare in as many months.
There are mumbles of agreement around her.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I don't set the fare myself. If you won't board the train, I'm going to have to ask you to step aside.
His hand none too subtly moves to his hip, where she knows his gun is holstered. Her grip on her daughter becomes sturdier. And she motions for her to shuffle back.
Or what, exactly? You and your fellow pig here are going to shoot me? In this crowd?
The officer's fingers close around his gun. The woman steps forward. The others around her begin to close in.
As the bullet strikes the soft pink matter hidden inside Krasmazov's skull, outside the palace, a barricade burns bright. Ashes and blood scatter across history.
Doom is an invitation to get food at Kim's place while wrapping up a case late in the evening. Why did you let him inside your house? There's the imprint of his feet on your rug, the indent he made on your couch. They will never go away. His smell will linger in your living room. Kim doesn't think about what it means and how much it will hurt later. They're laughing. He sees the rise, fall, rise, fall, rise, fall, rise, fall of his chest. The mirth bounces off the wall and Kim feels open. They're close, so close. Kim doesn't stop himself. They're closer and closer, warm breath ghosting on the edge of his mouth and lips, hot skin under fingertips, and the faint imprint of a heartbeat against his own, and the rise, fall, rise, fall, rise, fall. The materials of Harry under his thighs, his hands, nails, knuckles, wrists, skin, arms, collarbone, neck, cheeks, jaw, temples, hair, chest, belly, hips, thighs, knees, ankles. Heart, lungs, liver, central nervous system, veins, muscles, bone marrow. That is everything Harry is. Kim feels it all thrum under his own body, shares breath with it, feels alive with it. Kim's palm on Harry's cheek, foreheads against each other, breaths in and out. He comes apart and spills all of himself under Harry's warm attention. Kim blooms. He loves all of him, he thinks. Every second, every centimeter.
A state of emergency has been declared in Revachol. Coalition authorities have sent in troops to reinforce the RCM and help restore the peace in the face of mass rioting and looting that began in Jamrock train station yesterday evening.
We are at war. This is the war between the forces of order and progress, and the forces of chaos, panic, and violence,
said Coalition spokesman Sebastian Chadwick. Authorities are asking all law-abiding citizens to remain home and shelter away from the violence on the streets.
All innocent civilians of Ravenshaw have nothing to fear. The RCM and coalition troops are collaborating on keeping the peace and safeguarding everyone's integrity and property from the violent rioters and looters,
said Ptolemaeus Price, chief of Precinct 41. He declined to comment on reports of passerby presumably injured by the RCM's crowd control tactics last night. Coalition authorities have also instituted a curfew, which will begin tonight at 6 p.m. and will run until tomorrow at 7 a.m.
Their instructions at the precinct are straightforward. Each pair of RCM officers are to match up with a pair of coalition officers, then do rounds around a predetermined area. Playing backup. Simple. Kim's heart remains steady and his hands still. His eyes shift to Harry next to him. The valleys on his skin twist and tangle and move, and Kim pretends not to read them. He thinks again about tendons, muscle, skin, bones, underneath him, breathing, rise and fall, rise and fall, rise and fall. He wants to feel it again. Now and tomorrow until forever. He is placing a gentle hand on Harry's shoulder, and Harry is looking back at him. Do not drift, he thinks. Those valleys turn and shift again, and again Kim pretends not to read them.
Ignis Nilsson's cataclysmic metamorphosis begins with a shriek. There's blood on his hands, and he no longer knows who it belongs to, nor who put it there. He can only see Mazop's body, limp and lifeless on the floor. He swears revenge. He swears victory.
The students are huddled together, crouched around a barricade. The fire crackles and illuminates the dark as the smoke drifts into the air, carrying with it still the faint smell of petrol. The early spring night is cool, but the burning tires do their part to warm it up. The conversation even more so.
I was there. I saw it. She was bleeding all over the station floor, but I don't know what happened in the end. I heard the gunshot, then suddenly there were lacrimogens. I couldn't see anything.
There's a silence. Sirens echo against the fading sun.
It's hard to know anything, honestly. Almost none of the radio stations are reporting anything useful, just whatever bullshit the Coalition tells them to. All law-abiding citizens are advised to shelter in place unless they want to be fucking kidnapped and murdered, and who knows what, by the RCM and their Coalition friends.
A few meters ahead, a different barricade burns, and a few meters behind, another.
Do you know how many people they've arrested? I don't know. At the station, I saw at least 3 being dragged into a car, and we were able to stop them from taking a couple more, but it was a mess. Fucking pigs. They do whatever the fuck they want with us, don't they? They came into my neighborhood last night, you know, after the curfew. Mine too. All of my neighbors came out, and same deal, really. I didn't see anything, but I heard gunshots, and then lacrimogens until we couldn't breathe. Didn't matter, though, in the end, there weren't enough of them. Left running scared.
Despite it all, the students laugh. One of them tosses some more trash into the fire. It crackles and dances in the tranquil breeze. Smoke mixes with smog. The night gets a little warmer.
Kim notices Harry's eyes. In the bright light of the morning, the green shifts from corner to corner, from one building to another. There's a thrum under his skin that's getting faster. He swallows something down and looks at Kim, really looks at him. Like there's a question in his eyes. But Kim cannot read it, and so instead he presses a hand on his arm, silently. They follow their Coalition duo loyally, like dogs, twist and turn around the streets of the Jamrock Quarter, fortifying the ring around the train station, a focal point for the insurrection. Kim lets his mind shift into focus. He hears every footstep, sees every change in light, muscles tense, ready for any attack. Harry trails a step behind. Kim thinks he wants to pull him along by the hand, a warm hand, a worn hand, with all of its tendons, muscles, bones. The one he felt lay across his heart last night. It is unprofessional, so he does not. Instead, he keeps his palm resting against his holstered gun.
It should probably have been planned out with a bit more diligence, but they had all agreed material conditions were there, and so was the ethical need to act in these conditions. So the students had sat in a circle, strategically hidden behind a low wall at the back of an alley, as they cut strips of cloth down and carefully placed them in glass bottles with just enough petrol in them before sealing. And now she walks with half the bottles in her bag, while one of her friends carries the other half, round glasses constantly sliding down his nose due to the sweat on his face. They aren't really nervous, though perhaps, she thinks, they should be. As they round on the street surrounding the precinct, they have to be more careful. Ducking around corners, alert, walking as unseemingly as possible. Ironically, there is not much vigilance around the precinct itself. That was part of why they had decided to do this now, when most officers were out focusing on the train station and certain neighborhoods that had been focal points for protests since it all started. The brick building stands tall and imposing as the students close in from 2 sides. She checks them. Makes sure again that they are not being followed, and spots an RCM vehicle approaching from the street behind them. She whistles a quick tune, and everyone takes on a different pace, dispersing over the sidewalk among a handful of people walking home in the hour before curfew, while the motor carriage passes by with no issue. She watches it park in front of the precinct, and 2 officers step out. They're still a bit far off, but she can tell there are 2 of them, a taller, bulkier man, and a shorter, thinner one. They walk into the building in silence, and she thinks she senses something tense in the way they walk, but she can't be sure at this distance. Not that it matters. Once the men walk into the building, she whistles again, and they all pick up the pace. As they arrive, they duck behind the motor carriages parked outside. She and her friend remove their backpacks, tugging them open and leaving them there, glass clinking dangerously on the ground. She pulls on a sweatshirt and wraps a shirt around her face, and when she looks back up, all of the students are indistinguishable from each other. One by one, she and her friend distribute the bottles.
Nilsson orders a retreat. There is no other choice, not with the forces of reaction surrounding the palace, subduing the city, not with the blood still staining the carpet, Mazov's lifeless eyes staring up at him. He thinks he can still hear him in his mind, and so he knows a strategic retreat is the right choice for the revolution. They are close enough to the edge of the Pale, which is close enough to Samara that he knows they can make it. In Samara, they can start again. They can win. Samara, Mazov's home, to which he is now never to return. Nilsson orders the enemy impaled by the thousands on the march there, and the people follow him into the Pale and into the future.
There's a noise, and then there's fire. It's all yellow and red inside the precinct, and Kim thinks, Harry. He looks around and finds him crouched behind a desk. Safe. Kim breathes. Another crash, and there's more fire, and he moves to crouch behind Harry, feels the agitation in the air, in Harry's breath, in Harry's heartbeat, his body almost as hot as the flames. Harry grabs Kim by the hand and stands. They move back, away from the windows, towards the hall, towards the door. The smoke follows them like a tendril, like a fungus expanding down the hallway and crowding up their airways. Harry coughs and Kim inhales it. Legs ache, shake. They're running, running, running. The smoke is in their clothes, in their hair. There's more fire, more smoke. Harry's pulse under Kim's fingers. His wrist is so delicate. Outside, finally. They breathe and Harry whispers something into the night, but Kim does not hear him. The blood in his ears is too bright and the fire in the precinct is too loud. In front of him there are six figures, black, identical and blending into each other, gripping bottles with one hand and lighters with the other. Kim understands now. He understands the threat. He understands how to neutralize it. His hand flies to his holster and Harry grabs his arm.
Next to her, a friend launches another Molotov at the precinct. And something seems to strengthen them because they manage to hit through a window on the second floor. She remembers the girl bleeding out on the floor of the train station, the painful taste of lacrimogens, and she smiles as she sees the fire take hold, consuming the building from the inside out. Two pigs come out of the precinct, running and rushing and breathless. They seem stunned for a moment, confused. And she lets herself laugh for a bit.
Pigs out!
She shouts as a warning, before ducking behind a motor carriage for cover. There are only two of them. If they play it right and don't leave anyone behind, she knows they can make it.
Kim, don't!
Says the bigger one, reaching for the other one's arm. She can't quite see it, but she thinks the thin one has reached for his gun. Why is he stopping him? It doesn't matter. Her bespectacled friend decides it's his opportunity to move between motor carriages, away from the precinct and out into the eastern exit route. And in that precise moment, the thin officer wrests his hand away from his partner and pulls out his firearm, pointing it squarely at her friend.
Don't move. All of you, out right now. You are under arrest for a terrorist attack on the RCM.
She looks at her friend. Beneath the black fabric, she cannot see much, but she knows from the way his eyes dart left and right that his heart is racing in time with the fire.
Kim!
The bigger one seems oddly tense, hesitant even. She doesn't understand what's going on, but she knows an opening when she sees it.
Let him go!
She shouts from behind the motor carriage.
There are two of you and many more of us. We know the precinct is unguarded.
The thinner one does not drop his weapon. If anything, she thinks she sees his fingers tense on the trigger. She swallows.
Kim, please, what are we doing here? We're supposed to help people. They're just kids.
The thinner one does not look away from her friend.
We're supposed to keep things in order, Harry. That is what helping people means. Helping people isn't shooting them for being out on the streets, for saying what needs to be said, for standing up for once. We should be fighting with them, against the coalition, against the capitalists.
The thinner one lets out a noise of pained frustration and briefly looks at his partner before rapidly focusing on his target again.
You're too idealistic, Harry,
he says through gritted teeth.
Hands up, now. You are all under arrest.
Her friend looks at her, twitches. She tries to shake her head. He runs.
The city of Rivershall pulses underneath the innocentic shadow that looms above. The people run along her veins, screaming as they see the bomb fall from the clouds above. And she knows, in her final moments, that there is nowhere they can run to. All she can do is watch. Watch as a woman drops her grocery bags at the edge of the staircase, along with her jaw. Watch as a teen hugs her younger brother in the park, because she understands something that he does not. Watch as a former officer of the RCM sits on his balcony and thinks about his regrets in alphabetized order as the end dawns on him. Rivershall and her people face oblivion like they face any Tuesday afternoon, with a knot at their throat and the future clawing at their feet.
The gunshot rings far too loudly in Kim's ears.
The End. Written work posted April 2025. Audio recorded May 2026. Thanks for listening.